representatives and make demands that will, we must, that will reflect our needs. I have to be optimistic that everyone who is elected, at least in the beginning, works for the people. Therefore, assuming that this is the right most of the time, we will impact legislation by telling the legislators we do provide employment, we do require some attention. I remember distinctly not too long ago when I was working out of Juneau in 1976, there was a shoe sales person who owned the sales shoe store. He went down to Juneau and in a manner of speaking, he kicked the door in at City Hall and says, "Here I am, I'm a businessman, I pay dues, I pay my city taxes, and I'm not happy with this." And I was attending a meeting that relates to a topic relates to what I was involved in, so I happened to be nearby. Well, City Hall staff stopped and really looked at and listened to this one taxpayer paying. He owns a business. Whenever I get discouraged, I remember this person. Hey, it's what we believe in and what we want that we should continue to work for. This guy was working for what he believed in, and he was getting a lot of mileage, and I'm saying I think this kind of a hearing identifies our common factors, which is, to me, has an emotional value when it comes to working for something. No, somebody else is in the same boat. Let's all do something about it. I'll have to.
Mr. Warren, thank you very much.
I don't have much to say since all these high class people talked before me. My name is Richard Kinn. One of the things that was asked, does DC Alaska benefit you? Yes, it does, but in the middle part way now, it starts to get sour on us. The Sea Alaska branch off so much that it's hard to say who belongs, which office belongs to the Sea Alaska. We're under one office up here in Tlaquan and Angoon all around where the housing were built. Yes, we were happy when it first came out, those houses. But once you start looking into that house, what do you have? Just a shell. And we're not happy with it. Does Sea Alaska benefit us? No. The houses that we are staying in, as I told Edward Warren, I think he has the same kind of house that I have. I think all of us have the same kind of house. When you walk from one corner to another, if your things on the shelf are not sitting right, it falls off. And if you look under the houses, you don't find any 12 by 12 for the house to sit on. That's what makes it kind of hard to say I'm happy with the Sea Alaska in the office. Just one part of it, I'm telling you. The contract is written so much that it's hard to say that you're going to find a loophole in it. The HUD found the loophole. When they sold us these houses, they told us we're going to be the owners. But just a few years back, there's rent, they turned it over to rent. Our rent's sky high for low housing rent. And then the HUD stepped in. I've been looking for that letter from the Tlingit and Haida. They told the Tlingit and Haida to come back to the house ownership. That dropped our rent. For low-income people like us, who have no business, going up into $200 rent, supposed to be low housing rent. I'll just stop right there because I'm not satisfied with the house that sold me for $52,000. The foundation is so poor. You walk across the floor and your things just wobble up and down just like a rubber. I helped put in the water line just to save people, houses. I asked the main boss, says, how come this water line shut off has no drainage? When you shut off the water, when you're going on vacation, winter time, you're going to have a wrecked house when you come back. Oh, it'll be all right, that's the answer. This house will stand 55 degrees below zero. Nothing will freeze. That's the answer I got. That year, some houses had broken pipes. I believe if this review commissioner and this troop go through the houses, you'll see all kinds of things in the wall with holes in it. Now, subsistence, true what my niece said, fish is our food. Bear meat is our food, so is moose. Most of all is the firewood. Last year I went down to the land office here. I asked them for a permit to cut birch for my home. They told me right in my face, if you're going to cut birch, you're going to buy it from this office. It's a commercial use. We never had to buy birch before. It's that we're going through. Fish, we use it all year round. We're limited to 50 sockeyes, 100 dogs. I went through my children. My wife and I's children, their birth date, not counting the grandchildren. We come up with 37 children, grandchildren. Will this 50 sockeyes be enough for them? No way. For our own use, I've been trying to figure out a way. I think our big mama there knows. Our food for the winter, bear, we kill them. This way we control the growth of the brown bear. Now, they charge us for tag to kill a brown bear. We can't do it. That's why our land is being overrun by brown bear. Now, what I want to say, the children that is born after it was closed, that is a hard question to settle. If I say it should be recorded and have shares given to them, the other person's going to jump on me. It'll have to be settled within a group by itself, picked group, to settle this matter by 1991. And let's go back to 1971. We all got shares, Sea Alaska shares. And those shareholders at large got money. If I'm not mistaken, you folks will agree with me. Our first share that we got here in Tlaquan, I believe is $2 in some odd sense. Our second check we got was 52 cents from Sea Alaska. And how can we be satisfied? My brother didn't get the chance what I got. I was told to come back to my original village. I didn't think they'd tell my brother Charles. That's why I came back here. This is my home. And I'm proud to be here. Let's go back to that timber. True. What my niece Lonnie said, we'd be better off if we had land up here. But how are we going to get the land? How are we going to get 23,000 acres? There's so many people occupying every square feet in this valley. We were lucky for Tlaquan people to have Tlaquan village privately owned. There's no other land outside of it where we can say that we'll have it for 23,000 acres. Then I hear about this service land and underground land. This land belonged to Tlaquan privately, as we all voted for broke. I don't know if the private land, when you find mineral underground, that Sea Alaska can step in and take it away. That's your own private land. (Clears throat) When's the Alaska send a lawyer here for this iron ore which we're sitting on? The lawyer was talking, sitting on a table here. When we told him about where the iron ore is coming from, he told us, all you have is just what this village is sitting on. That's your point of a discovery, and that's all you got. That's why I got mad and I got up. Mr. Paul, do you recognize Juno, where they found the gold? Yes, in the village. Did someone find that gold in the mountain? The same company went back into that mountain. They discovered that gold. From their point of a discovery, you can go back as far as you want to. That's yours. That's the law. I might be mistaken, but I had to see something. Now, you folks talk about gold belt. What I understand, no one has the gold belt share except the people who was in Juneau. That's the only place that the gold belt is owned, just the Juneau people. I tried to ask for it, says you don't belong to Juneau. Just the boys and the grown up people that belongs in Juneau got Sea Alaska shares. They're the ones belong to the gold belt. I don't know why it's that way. I was told to inquire about it so that I can be in it, but when I got the answer back, it says no. That's why a lot of these Sea Alaska shareholders are not in the gold belt. I think I've told you all that I know, that all I want to say. I feel better getting it off my chest, knowing that when 1991 comes around, sure will be taxed. But I believe myself, when you own your share, I would say don't sell it. If we sell that shares, we loosen our land, our ownership to that land. It's better that we hang on to it, what we have. Yes, United States paid us for the land. Once we sell it, we have no place to go. But if we hang on to that shares, we've got a place to live. And that's our land. I forgot one thing. The land is ours. I got to ask this one to the commissioner here. When the land was settled, in that land program it is written, where Alaska Native people is buried, that land must be returned to them. How come it's not being returned to them? like the one in Haines. That waterfront, that's a native land. And there are natives are buried there. You can see those tombstones right there. But as we understand, when the settlement was made, that it shall be turned to the natives. That's what I want to know now. You have an answer for that?
Well, the Congress said that the Native people were to get 44 million acres and, 40 million acres and 2 million acres representing grave sites and historic sites. And some of those were selected and transferred to the Native people. But I think there is still a certain amount of controversy about many of them. That is, whether or not people really did get what they wanted. And clearly, on the basis of what you and many others say, they didn't.
Well, I guess there's an answer to it somewhere. The reason why I asked this too, there's a land that is owned by Native. But the surveyor papers are lost. The posts are all scraped on, buried, and we can't get the land. And there's Native people are buried there. My father-in-law and them stayed there maybe about close to 100 years now, over 100 years. Their house was there, they pushed it right out. That's what we're going through. I'm glad at least I talk a little bit, that you hear me, my saying what I think. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. King. Thank you. We may hear a little more about that later tonight. Yes, sir.
My name is Frank Hughes, Sr. I was born in Juneau about September of 1930, to clarify that for the record. And I left Juneau somewhere about 1960, let's see, when was it? Well, it was after statehood came in, I remember that, because I had the privilege to vote against it. Although, at the time, it was a very brief, short subject that was brought to some of our attention that were kind of young in those days, in my age. And somewhere in the back, I think it was on the back down in the bottom, it said, shall we vote for statehood, is what it amounted to. We hadn't heard about it. We were not briefed on it. We didn't know what statehood was going to be. And we were not informed. We had one time, as I recall, on the election, because before that, the governor that we had under territorial status was controlled by his little mouthpieces, and he had to say to us what the people around him had to tell him. So we weren't a very well-informed group of people, I'm quite sure. I do remember statehood coming in and was kind of surprised that it did pass because nobody seemed to have voted for it, but it still went through. And all of a sudden, we're a state. And I remember the federal government or the state government being formed and all of this new transition taking over, new degrees of law that would be able to be enforced because you are now a state. You're not controlled by the federal government anymore as a territory. You will do and abide by what the state says. And so all these bureaucratic governments all got together and started dictating laws, fish and game and fish and wildlife and all these different subsistence forms and styles had their law laid out, and you can and you will at this given date and not later than this given date have X number of whatever it might happen to be, and that would be it, bang, and the book's closed. If you didn't apply because you weren't informed, and you went out and illegally in those days shot a deer or too many ducks, bang, you went to jail or you got a fine or whatever it was, partly because we were not informed. It was our subsistence lifestyle to go out and live off the land. We hunted and we fished, and whatever was available for us, we took. We didn't waste. It didn't go to spoil or anything. We used it for ourselves. Well, John Law came in and said, you got too much fish, deer, goats, whatever it happened to be. Here's the ticket for you. We'll take half of what you have, maybe for the prisoners or from their own locker. I don't know. But statehood was a terrible shock. We weren't ready for it. And this transition that's coming up for 1991 is kind of reflecting the same thing on me. We've heard, and back in those days, we heard so little about statehood, and then all of a sudden, one day, after nobody voted for it, we got it. Well, here's 1991 coming up right around the corner. And we haven't heard an awful lot yet about what this transition is going to be at 1991, other than our stocks will be able, our shares will be able to be sold and traded, or if we so desire. I'm sure it's going to be the same thing again. Everybody's going to vote against it, but it's still going to happen, unless we band together and make ourselves as a council or as a government of our own, if that's what it happened to be almost, to make our voice be heard and all be unison. Have one voice and all agree on one thing so that this torn attitude that still persists won't be here anymore. It'll be one voice, one yes or one no. And not necessarily, I suppose it's supposed to be the majority. But for when nobody voted for it and it still happened, why, I don't know what happened to our votes that the ones that didn't vote for it. And on the other part, I have just about exhausted all my forms of trying to get information as to how somebody else, or I could, especially myself and my wife, I was born in Juneau. I want to know how I can get into Gold Belt. Everybody else automatically got it, but the wife and I got left out. My brother didn't even ask for it, and he got it. And he don't know how he got it, but every now and then, he pulls his, certificate out, Gold Belt, and he carries a little card in his pocket, Gold Belt. I see there a multi-million dollar beautiful building in Juneau with all their, their Gold Belt building is sitting right on the corner where I was raised, where I was born, almost. And I still don't belong to it. We have inquired, we've asked, we've written letters, we've went to the door even. Well, you're always in the wrong building, or take that elevator over there that doesn't work anymore, you know. You know, the typical runaround that you get from this type of government bureaucracy. And how did somebody else get it and I didn't? Why wasn't I invited to the party at least? Thanks for your attention then. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Yes, sir.
My name is Annie Hodge, 84.
Please, you just be seated, ma'am, and we'll bring the microphone over there. You don't have to stand. Well, you spoil my language already. Is he ready?
Uh-huh.
This is the way I'm going to put out my language. I don't know what year the state got us. There's was one lady and a man was put it out for talking for the state. The woman name is Mrs. Wanamaker and the man name is Wanamaker. And now I'm going to use my language. This is my interpreter here. Yeah, nakata kawai atak til radio kadak is kitch. Ikayaka. Shinayasa, shinayasa, stage is shinayasa, kunaki kokeha ik. Ikayaka. Same way the.
The individual named Wanamaker in the public gathering addressed the people saying that get involved, do make yourself known. The statehood is good for us.
The sisterhood that wish I would. We call her brotherhood. And our status to graduate Kayaka.
There was a woman and a man, and they were convincing. But there's a reason to believe that they were paid to do to be convincing.
I was the GS children at.
Because these were very convincing arguments, the people did as they were asked to. But now we know that the state has taken the lands that under territory would have been always recognized as native lands. And it is now very apparent that statehood never was what it's claimed to be. And that's paraphrased, that one right there. I'm not quite up to my translation there.
Yeah. How yai that gusu wat atke atuti ha yi dewe we yi dat ka our statements ti dat ko our yai dat at ko khat sa ti aske wo mande khak ta ko khch adu sa before time he knew that he mande khit ka o khit sa khat ya ko.
She always have found it to be very heavy issue to be persuaded by the original arguments that a state is going to be good for the native people because. She's re-emphasizing again, saying that the native people did lose the lands. But that wasn't all they have lost because it's impacting the fishing, the way they fish and the way they're not allowed to fish.
Sunday kakinu de tia kakotikate shuts hai dat ko our states Sunday kaya or tea that makes hurt my heart.
before the statehood, the fishermen went fishing on Mondays, but did not fish on Sundays. After the statehood, Sunday was no longer any special day. State allowed fishing on a Sunday, and this really bothered her, and still does. This also influenced our food. The certain amount of food, the salmon's is beginning to be parceled out, which never been perceived in that manner before. I mean, just when you needed fish, you got it. Just as it is, the salmon situation is presently with us, meaning we are allowed to catch less and less, and by first it was by the, I guess recall now that it was by so many salmon, now it's by the pound. She talked to me earlier, she mentioned pound, so it is also in the same manner, we are losing not only our salmon, but our total lifestyle, our total environment is going by the in the similar way as we are losing our salmon. We are we're being
church also liach, kagurat also liach, no trespass ato dutli atis akhto kit ei dat ko.
Now we are, in a manner of speaking, and so again I have to paraphrase this because the direct literal translation, there's no really no counterpart in the English language in my command of the language. In a manner of speaking, we've been enticed by the non-native to support some of the activities that's brought about by statehood, and there are some of it is seen in terms of new religion brought in, and there's new institutions brought in, new organizations brought in, which we are subject to. And again, that's I'm paraphrasing some of it, and I think what she has addressing is that we're subject to a lot of institutional living that we have not experienced before.
How try to canster by brand cock to yeah, we are trying to fish a fish.
Before I lose the gravity of this statement, is that do you suppose a non-native were Do you suppose a non-native is, if they told them, they were told that they are allowed only 4 or 5 dozen eggs a season? Well, she's using this as an example, as we are told that to use 4 or 5 dozen of salmon on the subsistence. In the past, the people have, meaning the native tribes, have gone to, on a selected time, gone to one stream to get a certain type of fish, and to another one at another for another type of fish, and lived as they were available. But now we have labels on everything, which I think.
I asked
It's her understanding that this meeting is going to address anything that concerns and concerns the native people. And she concludes saying, "Isn't this right?"
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Just one more thing to bring up. We've just about covered all angles of the subsistence, and you could talk all night on it, and you'll still find something new to bring up about it. What I wanted to ask is about sovereignty. Wisdom people in Congress admit they have no answer to the sovereign issue among the different tribes of the Indians. I do not like to use the word native, like everyone seems to be doing, because a native is anyone who is born. He can be considered a native, whereas an Indian is Aboriginal. Whenever I get to talk to a lawyer, I ask his definition, what is a native and what is an Indian? So I read one time in a newspaper that this was quoting the Secretary of Interior, and he said there is only one sovereign in Alaska, and that is the state of Alaska, where the Indian tribes have been trying to say that we have sovereignty by treaty. I went to a workshop in Sitka at one time, I forget the name, maybe Tony knows. This was a man out of Washington, D.C., carrying on this workshop, and he said that you have sovereignty, you cannot lose it unless by an act of Congress. Whether you use it or not, it is there. The only way you can be told you do not any longer have sovereignty is if you voluntarily give it up, which has been offered to several tribes that I know of. So I say, do not give up anything. They can tell us that we do not have sovereignty. But who is one man to say what is what? That is something that I know you people must have been covering in your different meetings. And if anyone has an answer that looks reasonable, perhaps you could let us in on it. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. King. You're quite right. Subsistence comes up at every meeting I've held, and so does sovereignty. And often that's because people think native sovereignty may be the best way, they feel, to have some control over what happens in their villages and on their land and in relation to their subsistence resources. I've heard that expression, there's only one sovereignty in the state of Alaska. In fact, there are two. Even without considering native sovereignty, there's federal sovereignty and state sovereignty. It's a federal system of government. I will, before we close the meeting, say something about something further about sovereignty. I don't think that I don't think anyone says that Indian tribes